Hello and welcome to 620 Patio. Man, it is chilly out tonight. I got to get this fire stoked up. I'm going to play a song and we are going to get rolling into the show. Man, what a crowd, what a crowd.
Wow.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hey, I would like to welcome my co-host with the mostest.
Hi, I'm Lucky Me.
And I'm Shane TBG. Welcome to 620 Patio. And I would like to welcome Aberrant to the panel. And,
hi, guys.
And Shelby, how you doing? How you ladies doing out there tonight? Welcome to the show.
Great. How are you guys?
Oh, great, great. We have a great show lined up tonight, a new take on Independent Woman. It may not be what you think in the end. Just stay tuned, okay? So
okay.
I want to welcome everybody from across the United States. All of our downloads out there are going through the roof. I'd like to welcome UK, Sweden, Germany, Australia, Canada, and Mexico. And we are made it to level 3.
Yay!
Yay! So anyway, with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Lucky Me for a little disclaimer, and we'll be on the way.
Okay. All right. So we are happy you all joined the show this evening. We hope you understand that we are not counselors, mental health professionals, or psychologists. If you feel like you need help, please seek it immediately from people that are trained to help you. We want to express that we understand this may be a sensitive topic. We do not find this topic funny, but there may be some laughter during the show. We have no intention for anything discussed on today's show to trigger anyone or to bring up any bad memories. So if it does trigger you, we apologize up front. Today's focus is on the topic of a new take on the independent woman. So come on over, have a seat on our patio so we can have a great discussion. We do ask that people that come up on the panel, if you feel like you want to share your experiences, please be respectful of others and what they share, even if it disagrees with your beliefs. So I've been very excited about this topic, so I hope everybody enjoys. A lot of women nowadays are focused on being an alpha woman. Women are more successful in their working lives than ever before, but at what cost? We think we have to adopt the alpha woman or a girl boss persona in order to achieve and rise up, but that really isn't the case. We don't need to put ourselves into hyperdrive trying to grind out all of our work, the kids, parents, bills, and handling the entire household schedules, cleaning, cooking, all of that. It burns us out in the process. Women have equated success with donning on masculine armor and furthering themselves from their natural femininity and feminine flow. This means that women hold themselves back and they don't allow themselves, keyword, allow themselves to soften. And that includes softening in their romantic relationships. All too often, women adopt the alpha personality, and with it comes anger, resentment, and a dismissive attitude, sometimes towards their own partner. The idea of being a girl boss promotes a it's me against the world mentality, and that you need to be fiercely independent to achieve your goals. So then you'll blame your career, or blame a man, or blame society, none of which is true, but personal responsibility is the most important thing to remember as we discuss this topic tonight. No one is making you hypermasculine. You're choosing to wear that badge as an honor. Sorry.
My fault.
Okay. Wow. Okay. No one's making you wear the hypermasculine armor. You're choosing to wear it as a badge of honor. But for whom? So equality, I'm going to interject a lot of my own opinion. I even have notes all over my little handwritten notes all over my notes that say IMO, which is in my opinion. Everybody that knows me well knows I love to give my opinion on everything. I have an opinion on everything, so I'm going to give it quite a bit tonight. So equality means not being able to control somebody or see them as inferior. It also means, in my opinion, that you don't need it, or it doesn't mean that you control another person. So we had talked about last week, we had talked about emasculation and making, you know, treating somebody differently or treating them trying to take that control from them, that does not mean that you're equal at all. You know, being an independent woman has, in my opinion, almost become a derogatory term. When I was younger, you know, being an independent woman meant that I satisfied myself by achieving goals that I set for myself. or I had a crisis and I could take care of it myself. I may not know what to do if a pipe burst, you know, how to fix it myself, but I would know to shut off the water and then call somebody that knows what to do. If I had a flat tire, I've never, honestly, at 53 years old, I have never had to change a flat tire in my life, but I think I could do it if I needed to.
I think you can.
You know, so, you know, being able to take care of yourself is a great thing. And we shouldn't be rewarded for that. That just means you're a person, a contributing person in society. You know, you hold your job, you pay your bills, you cook your own meals. You know, you're satisfied with yourself. That to me is what an independent woman is. It's not controlling in a relationship. It's not having to be the one to handle everything and still have a smile on your face at the end of the day. Because sometimes you just don't. And it's okay to ask for help in your relationship. That doesn't make you less of a woman. It doesn't make you, you know, inferior or not accomplished. It just means that you're human and you're doing the best you can. And, you know, you marry people or you have family, you know, so that you can reach out to people when you need assistance on whatever it is. I am very blessed and very thankful that my husband has, he's a handy person.
Kind
of. Well, you are, in my opinion, you are, because you could do a lot of things that I can't. But, you know, that wasn't the case in all of my relationships. You know, I've had a relationship with some people that just don't even know what a crescent wrench is or, you know, socket right. set or whatever. So, and that's okay too, just because they don't. But those are things that parents should teach their children. They should, you know, it's not that traditional gender role. The men do the outside work and they maintain the vehicles and, you know, they make the money outside of the house and, you know, blah, 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 blah. They mow the grass. They, you know, they take care of all of that. Is that great? In my opinion, absolutely. I hate yard work. I don't like being outside. I don't like to be hot. I don't like bugs. And yes, I do want to go camping. I know my sister's laughing at me right now. So, you know, so this other traditional gender role for women is as the caretaker, taking care of the kids, taking care of all of the appointments, all of the scheduling, all of the running around, the cooking and the cleaning and the handling appointments. You know, if that fits in your family, that's great. But you don't have to teach your kids these traditional, quote unquote, I know you can't see my air quotes, but I'm giving them.
Welcome, Ezekiel.
These traditional gender roles. You don't have to follow those. You can teach your children both sides of it. You know, you can teach your sons that it's okay to show some emotion. You can teach your daughters how to defend themselves in a situation. You know, so I'm just saying kind of be equal, share it around. Because in my opinion, an independent person or an independent woman can take care of things on her own, but she doesn't have to rub it in somebody's face or any of that.
Yeah. Welcome, South Oz.
Hello, everybody. I hadn't had a chance to say hi. So I want to go into some like historical things that have happened. I have quite a few of them, so I probably will talk pretty fast. I tried to pick out the important ones, and I felt they all were. So I'm just going to start in, and Shane will tell me if anybody wants to add anything or if he wants to add anything. So so here we go. So back in 1769, when the colonists came to America, the colonies adopted the English system, decreeing that women cannot own property in their own name or keep their own earnings. In 1777, all states passed a law which took away women's right to vote. In 1809, I'm going to pronounce names wrong, so you know, just to save time, I'm just going to say a woman became the first to receive a patent. And it was for a method of weaving straw with milk. Hmm. In 1839, Mississippi.
Hey, Miss Shelby.
Hey, Shelby. I was waiting for the
hey. Mississippi.
Mississippi is the first state to grant women the right to hold property in their own names with permission from their husbands.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But you were the first state to at least allow women to own property. And it's a southern state, which I found very interesting.
Yeah,
that's very interesting.
1848 at Seneca Falls, New York, 300 women and men sign a declaration of sentiments, a plea for the end of discrimination against women. Mm. So it started way back in 1848. 1866, 14th Amendment was passed by Congress with citizens and voters defined as male in the Constitution. 14th Amendment was passed. Yeah. 1869, a woman was granted admission to practice law in Iowa.
Hmm.
I'm waiting for anybody that's downloaded the show to say, yay, yeah. Iowa. Okay. Making her the first woman lawyer. In 1872, a woman became the first female presidential candidate in the United States. This surprised the heck out of me. 1872. Mm-hmm. But she was nominated by the National Radical Reformers.
Wow.
That definitely would have been way back in that
day. Yeah, that's pretty radical.
Also in 1872, female federal employees, but not private sector workers. That's a lot of tongue twist right there. They were guaranteed equal pay for equal work under the law, which I am very thankful for because I work for the federal government. So I make the same amount as anybody in that position, right, and step. Susan B. Anthony cast her first vote to test whether the 14th Amendment would be interrupted broadly to guarantee women the right to vote. She was convicted of unlawful voting, so she was arrested. She tested the waters and they did arrest her.
Right.
1873, the Supreme Court rules that a state has the right to exclude a married woman from practicing law.
Wow.
So somebody had passed and became a lawyer.
Right.
Yes.
So you had to make another law to...
Yes. Yeah. The higher up. So the Supreme Court said, no, you can't. Hmm. 1887, a lady became the first woman elected mayor of an American town. And it was in Argonia, Kansas.
Really?
Yay, Kansas!
Yay, Kansas.
Okay. 1890 was Wyoming. Wyoming was the first state that granted women the right to vote in all elections. 1900, by this year, every state had passed legislation granting married women the right to keep their own wages and to own property in their own name.
Right.
So the 1900s. 1916, a woman from Montana.
Huh. Yay, Montana.
Is the first woman elected into the U.S. House of Representatives. 1918, a woman, 2 years after opening a birth clinic in Brooklyn, New York.
Mm.
Yay, New York. To allow doctors to advise their married patients about birth control. So basically that became Planned Parenthood in 1942.
The government might have been stepped involved in that one, huh?
I'm sorry, what?
The government was probably involved in that.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
1920, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified, ensuring the right of women to vote. Okay, so now we get into 1923.
Mm.
In 1923, I found out, is part of the World War II generation.
Yes.
They have taken the generational title boomers, mm-hmm, and have split that out into several new categories. So really? Depending on your birth date, if you or your parents or grandparents were born 1922 to 1927,
mm-hmm,
that's the World War II era.
Right.
Post-war is 1928 to 1945. So okay, we'll get into that here in a second. Okay. So the World War II generation. In 1923, the first version of an Equal Rights Amendment is introduced. It says, men and women shall have equal rights throughout the United States and every place subject to its jurisdiction.
Right.
So then we get into the post-war era or generation. It's also known as the Silent Generation. And so in 1932, a woman from Arkansas, yay, Arkansas, becomes the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate. Also in 1932, the National Recovery Act forbids more than one family member from holding a government job, resulting in many women losing their jobs.
Oh.
So there's been a lot of steps forward and several steps back.
Yep.
In 1933, a woman became the first cabinet member appointed Secretary of Labor by presidential FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt. So then nothing happens for 20 years, or at least isn't on this
until the next war.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good
See,
point.
That's a point that I have that is, it started when the men went off to war, the women had to go to the factories and work and produce ammunition, armor, whatever.
Jeep parts.
Yeah, yeah. So it all started
because they went to work and then they wanted the equal pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the next grouping of dates that we're going to discover is the Boomer One generation, which are people born from 1946 to 1954. Mm-hmm. So in 1953, there was a woman and she was the first U.S. woman to undergo astronaut testing. NASA, however, canceled the women's program in 1963. Not until in 1983 that an American woman finally gets into space. In 1963, the Equal Pay Act is passed by Congress, promising equitable wages for the same work, regardless of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex of the worker. That's still not equal in every place in America. Even though that was in 1963.
Right.
1964, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act passes, prohibiting sex discrimination in employment. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is created. So then we go into Boomer II grouping, which is 1955 to 1964. So in 1965, the Supreme Court establishes the right of married couples to use contraception. So really? Up until 1965, I guess it was illegal
to use contraception?
I guess. The Supreme Court establishes the right of married couples to use contraception.
Probably goes back to the Catholic Church, but I would have to do some research on that.
Yeah, we would. That might be another show.
Yes.
Okay. 1968, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs an executive order prohibiting sex discrimination by government contractors and requiring affirmative action plans for hiring women. In 1969, California adopts the nation's first no-fault divorce, allowing divorce by mutual consent. Also, Hillary Clinton, which we'll skip her. Okay. So then that brings So Wellesley college graduate Hillary Clinton becomes the first student to address a graduating class at commencement.
Okay. Let's give the Clintons due where something's due.
Okay. So now we're going into Generation X.
Don't want to get hung.
No, we don't. Which is 1965. To 1980.
Yes.
This is the best generation, if I do say so myself. Okay. So Generation X. So in 1972, Title IX of the Education Amendments prohibits sex discrimination in all aspects of educational programs that receive federal support. Also, the Supreme Court upholds the right to use birth control by unmarried couples. Okay. And a woman becomes the first director of the New York Stock Exchange. 1973, the landmark Supreme Court ruling Roe versus Wade made abortion legal. The Supreme Court, in a separate ruling, banned sex segregated help wanted advertising. Mm. So I guess they couldn't say man wanted or woman wanted, you know.
Right.
Or, yeah. Okay, so then 1974, housing discrimination on the basis of sex and credit discrimination against women are outlawed by Congress. The Supreme Court rules it's illegal to force pregnant women to take maternity leave on the assumption they are incapable of working in their physical condition. So I guess when they got pregnant, they were forced to take maternity leave mm-hmm. as soon as they found out versus after the birth.
Yeah.
Okay. 1975, the Supreme Court denies states the right to exclude women from juries.
Ah, all the way in 1975?
1975. So I guess...
I know some of you out there...
That's the year I was born.
That might feel old, but that's not that old.
That's not that old. So women couldn't serve on juries up until then.
I did not know that.
And I got my dang jury notice in the mail last week.
Yeah, you did.
Stinking thing. 1978, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act bans employment discrimination against pregnant women. So you no longer can, like, not hire a woman just because she's pregnant. 1980, a lady from Florida becomes the first woman to be elected to the U.S. Senate without following her husband or father in the job. So although... women had been elected to the U.S. Senate and to the U.S. House of Representatives. It was 1980 was the first time a woman became a U.S. Senator without following her husband or father into the job. So that's very interesting. Now we're going into the millennials, which is also known as Generation Y. Millennials are born 1981 to 1996. In 1981, and I'll say this name because I know her name's famous, Sandra Day O'Connor becomes the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court rules that excluding women from the draft is constitutional, but in a separate decision, the High Court overturned state laws designating a husband as head and master with unilateral control of property owned jointly with his wife. Hmm. And in breaking with tradition, Lady Diana Spencer deletes the vow to obey her husband as she marries Prince Charles.
Yes. That's that for our UK friends out there.
1981.
I know you'll be listening tomorrow, Miss Sue.
1983, Dr. Sally K. Ride becomes the first American woman sent into space. 1984, Geraldine Ferraro becomes the first woman to be nominated to be vice president on a major party ticket.
Yep.
She did not make it. U.S. Supreme Court banned sex discrimination in membership for one-time all-male groups like the JCs, Kiwanis, and Rotary Clubs. In my opinion, I don't see why women have to join those clubs, but I also don't see why they can't, you know right. what I mean? But let the guys have their thing. What, you know, who cares? But anyway, okay. That was just my opinion. In the state of Mississippi.
Shelby.
They blatantly ratified the 19th Amendment, giving the women the right to vote. So I guess, belatedly ratifies the 19th Amendment. So they hadn't, I guess, followed through.
Yeah.
They let him do it, but it wasn't official. But they just
finally it wasn't recognized.
It. Yeah, in 1984.
84.
Right. I remember. My grandmother talking about it with my mom. And this was my dad's mother. My mom's mother lived down here in a town called Tocopola. and it was election time, and I remember her talking to my mom about it when we came to visit one Christmas.
So I do want to point out that at this point in the millennials, the Generation Y, we're getting into 1986. The Gen Xers are the ones that are influencing all of these changes.
Yes.
So I wanted to point that out, that my generation spearheaded a lot of this. So I guess because I saw their mothers, the boomers, you know,
right,
constantly be at home, and the those traditional gender roles, that was very, very
well, I can remember,
common.
You know, in my younger years that my mother went to work as well, but she was home when she was needed to be home as a two.
Yeah.
So
she was there before school, yeah, and after school.
Yeah, yeah. She was there.
Then you were in her office when you were sick.
Yeah, or I was in her office. Yeah, yeah. So it did start a little bit before us, but we seen that. But my mother also made me clean the toilet and the tub, scrub it with Comet and everything else. So I knew housework and also to go out and work.
Yes.
40 hours a week.
Right. And you guys had gardens and,
yeah,
animals and horses. And so you did the inside and outside stuff.
Yeah. Plus, younger, you was kicked out of the house because your mom was trying to clean it or wanted some peace and quiet. I don't know why,
yeah,
but I drank out of the garden hose.
Oh my gosh, and you, yeah, survived.
Yeah.
You survived it, Shane.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, so in 1986.
I do too. Don't feel bad.
Right. Right. Ditto. Just have to make sure you let it run for a little bit because that water.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hot.
It was hot right at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Right.
So in 1986, the U.S. Supreme Court held that a work environment can be declared hostile or abusive because of discrimination based on sex. It's actually an important tool in sexual harassment cases.
Mm.
1989, Supreme Court affirms that the right of states to deny public funding for abortions and to prohibit public hospitals from performing abortions.
Yeah, yeah.
1992 was the year of the woman. Mm. Mm-hmm. Following the 1991 hearings, in which a lawyer accused the Supreme Court nominee of sexual harassment. Record numbers of women were elected to Congress, with four women winning Senate elections and 24 women elected to their first terms in the House.
Plus the old tail hook scandal.
Yes.
We did, in the military, we got a lot of education on the tail hook scandal.
Yes.
Yes.
1994, the Violence Against Women Act funds services for victims of rape and domestic violence and allows women to seek civil right remedies for gender-related crimes. 6 years later, the Supreme Court invalidates those portions of the law permitting victims of rape, domestic violence, etc., to sue their attackers in federal court. So now we get into Generation Z. This is my son's generation. And it is for people born in 1997. One place I read took it to 2012, but another place I read only took it to 2009.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a waffle in between Generation,
yeah,
Z.
That's
and the
X, Y, Z, and PDQ and all that thing. Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Okay. So now... So in 1997, Madeleine Albright becomes the first female Secretary of State. In 2005, Congress passes the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, the first law to ban a specific abortion procedure. The Supreme Court upholds the ban the following year. In 2007, Nancy Pelosi becomes the first female Speaker of the House. Oh, clear your throat there, Jim. 2008, Alaska. Yay,
welcome.
Alaska. Alaska House. Governor Sarah Palin. I don't know why I can't speak. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin becomes the first woman to run for vice president on the Republican ticket. I remember that.
You do? With,
yes,
Ross Perot?
Yes. And yes. Hillary Hillary Clinton loses the Democratic nomination to Barack Obama. 2009, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Play Restoration Act allows victims, usually women, of pay discrimination to file a complaint with the government against their employer within 180 days of their last paycheck. In 2012, the Paycheck Fairness Act, meant to fight gender discrimination in the workplace, but it fails in the Senate on a party line vote. 2 years later, Republicans filibuster the bill twice. So now we go into the next generation, which, depending on which website you go with, either starts in 2010 or in 2013. And it's to 2024. Most of these generations, after the boomers, they're about 15 years. Yes, so this is the grandkids. They are Generation Alpha. So in 2013, the ban against women in the military combat positions is removed, overturning a 1994 Pentagon decision restricting women from combat roles. In 2016, Hillary Clinton secures the Democratic presidential nomination, becoming the first U.S. woman to lead a ticket on a major party. She loses to Republican Donald Trump. And also in 2016, the Supreme Court strikes down the erroneous abortion clinic regulations that were forcing women's clinics to close. 2017, a woman became the first Latina senator. In 2020, Kamala Harris became the first woman elected vice president. In 2022, the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, the landmark case that established the right to an abortion nearly 50 years earlier. And in 2023, Congress has record numbered of women with 128 female House members and 25 female senators. And this was updated in March of 2023. So it's pretty updated. So one of the things I thought was interesting is some of the post-war, the big names, these were people born between 1928 and 1945. These are people like Gloria Steinem, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Maya Angelou. They are mothers of the second wave feminism. They were born into a world in which many women, married or unmarried, could not access contraception or serve on juries, and often needed a husband's permission to obtain a credit card. In 1970, the Silent Generation women were in their prime working years. At ages 25 to 42, women made up 38% of the total workforce. 53% of married mothers of color with children under 18 were in the labor force, compared to only 38% of married white mothers with children under 18. The Silent Generation mothers spent fewer hours in paid work than moms today, 8 hours per week on average in 1965 versus 21 hours in 2011. They also dedicated four fewer hours per week to taking care of their kids, but spent 14 or more hours per week on housework.
Oh.
Yeah. Good luck getting 14 hours of housework out of me a week. Shoot. Only 11% of women in the labor force had a college degree, and that was the post-war generation. The baby boomers, they put them, both sets of boomers, into the same category. Big names, Hillary Clinton, Oprah Winfrey, and Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's a Democrat from Massachusetts. Yay, Massachusetts. Other women of this group came of age during the height of the women's liberation movement and Vietnam-era protests. They were pioneers achieving unprecedented professional success. Women born in the late 50s and early 60s were the first group to overtake men in the completion of college degrees.
Right.
In 1990, when baby boomer women were in the ages of 26 to, they were in the ages 26 to 44. Women made up 45% of the labor force. Just more than one quarter of working women had college degrees. Women were 17.
The world runs off numbers.
Yep. Women were 17% of physicians and 22% of lawyers, up from less than 3% of lawyers in 1970.
Welcome crash.
The The baby boomers were the first generation to care for their aging parents and children simultaneously.
Right.
In 2023, 15% of people in their 40s and 50s were providing financial support to both aging parent and a child. The Generation Xers, big names are Senator Kristen Gildebrandt, she's a Democrat from New York, and Sheryl Sandberg and Shauna Rhimes. I don't even know who some of those people are, and I'm a Gen Xer. Gen Xers were raised to believe that girls could do anything and inherited a world shaped by profound post-1960s backlash. Older members of this cohort, the younger baby boomers, are more politically conservative than others in their generation, which is, I think, why they split the two boomer groups.
Right.
Nearly half, 46%, grew up in households where both parents worked. The divorce rate in the United States peaked during their formative years, and by the time the first generation Xers finished college, women were earning more bachelor's degree than men. Women also began to earn more master's degree than men in 1980s, a trend that continues today.
Yes, it is.
Generation Xers are in their peak family years, and in a 2013 study, they reported higher levels of work-family interface than did any other age group. So they had more work. I could bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and never let you forget you're a man, because they balanced everything. Generation Xers could do it all. And lastly, the millennials. I don't have anything beyond the millennials, but the big names here are Lena Dunham, Beyonce, and Emma Watson.
Hmm.
The most radically and ethnically diverse generation in American history, millennials were raised in a world of rapidly advancing technology, income inequality, and economic uncertainty. Trends towards intensive parenting and changes in technology mean that young people entering adulthood have much closer relationships with their parents than in the older generations. In 2013, 67% of mothers and 51% of fathers were in contact with their grown children ages 18 to 29 on a daily basis. So because of technology, they're actually closer with their parents, millennials are, because of the being able to reach out to them daily. You know, how you doing? Oh, great. You know, so they could talk daily.
Yeah, text.
Yes.
The kids don't answer the phone no more.
No, they don't.
You gotta text them.
Nope. And don't leave a voicemail. I'll see you that I missed a call. I'll call you back.
Yeah, right.
The oldest millennials are in their mid to late 30s, and many are parents, though they are marrying and having children later than older generations. The mean age for first-time mothers was 26 in 2013 compared to 21.4 in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, the median age for the first marriage was 26.6 for women and 29 for men, and that was up from 20.8 for women and 23.2 for men in 1970. Millennial women appear to be more aggressive about asking for raises and promotions than women of other generations. A 2013 Pew Research Center study reported that roughly equal shares of millennials at 42%, Generation Xers at 47%, and baby boomers at 45% have asked for a better job or higher salary, compared to only 33% of women in the silent generation. So I know this is a lot of information, but I really am enjoying this topic. So one of the things that I think impacts the women of today, our independent women talk, is self-worth versus self-esteem and understanding the difference. Self-esteem describes how you think and feel about yourself, which changes based on mood, circumstance, performance, or the approval of others. Self-worth is more global and stable form of self-esteem that comes from knowing and believing in your worth as a person. So we'll kind of delve in a little bit more into here, self-esteem. So self-esteem describes your thoughts and feelings about yourself. It is usually based on judgments you make about yourself in the moment. People with low self-esteem are less confident and have more negative thoughts and feelings about themselves. Low self-esteem can be situational or chronic, with chronic low self-esteem being more likely to cause emotional and behavioral problems. Because self-esteem involves your thoughts and feelings about yourself and your level of confidence, it isn't stable or constant. Instead, it depends heavily on the outer world of people, tasks, and external information used to compare, judge, and evaluate yourself. So one of the things to do is to remember that your self-esteem is your general mood or your stress level, your emotional state, and how you make sense of yourself and your experiences. So what is self-worth? Researchers describe self-worth as a broader, more stable form of self-esteem, less likely influenced by outside or inside factors. So instead of focusing on specific traits or skills or circumstances, achievements, self-worth describes the core beliefs that you have about your worth and your value. Core beliefs tend to be consistent over time, which is why self-worth is less likely to change in response to feelings, thoughts, behaviors, or experiences. A person with high self-worth is believed to have a more stable and positive form of self-esteem. It provides protection against stress and emotional problems, while also making a person healthier, happier, and more successful in life. So the key differences between self-worth and self-esteem. So self-worth is deeper because it's more into your feelings,
right,
than self-esteem. So low self-worth is similar to shame. It's driven by deep beliefs and feelings that being unworthy, bad, or not good enough, because that's how you feel, how worthy you feel. Self-esteem is also based on thoughts and feelings about yourself, and usually as a response to things happening in the moment and how you're perceiving these events. So another way, another difference between self-worth and self-esteem is that self-esteem fluctuates more than self-worth. So there can be internal and external triggers that could cause self-esteem to go up and down.
Right.
Another one, the key difference between self-worth and self-esteem is that self-esteem is more fragile than self-worth. because self-esteem is more vulnerable to internal and external factors, it is also more fragile. Mm-hmm. Many of the factors that influence it change frequently and are not always within our control, which, of course, can lead to anxiety as well. Unless you have a strong backup system of self-worth to rely on when your self-esteem takes a hit, the inevitable ups and downs of life can then start to take an emotional toll.
Exactly.
Another one is self-esteem is more judgmental than self-worth. Self-esteem is a byproduct of your critical mind, the part that's really good at finding and fixing the problems. This part of your mind is always looking for new information it can use to evaluate and compare you to, including other people, their expectations versus your own expectations. That's why your self-esteem could be higher or lower depending on who you're around or what situation you're in. Self-worth uses your inner critic in a different way. Because self-worth is mostly fixed and stable, it will use the critic to enforce its existing beliefs about your worth rather than recalculating according to the situation. This means that a person with low self-worth will often selectively reinforce their negative view of themselves by focusing on their failures and shortcomings while discontinuing their successes and strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, True self-worth comes from within, and unlike self-esteem, it does not need to be found, built, or rebuilt. With self-esteem, largely developed in response to things that happen in your life, how people respond to you, or how well you do a task. Self-worth is found inside. The main differences that distinguish, so self-worth is inherent, not something that you need to earn. Self-worth does not rely on comparisons to remain high. Self-worth does not have conditions or contingencies that you have to meet. Self-worth does not change according to your success or your failures. Self-worth comes from deep, healthy, trusting relationship with yourself. And self-worth is strengthened by knowing and showing your true self. Self-worth can be cultivated through mindfulness and self-compassion. So the key is to have a high self-worth, because if your self-esteem takes a hit, your self-worth can bring yourself back up and, right. and bring you back up. So now I'm going to get into quite a bit of my own opinion. I kind of looked at this like a good side and a bad side. Okay. So the bad side of this notion of this independent woman, okay. Mm-hmm. It can be intimidating to other people.
Definitely.
Depending on how you portray yourself out to others. A lot of people use it as a blame. If something doesn't go right, it's always somebody else's fault or something, you know, they don't take that time to look within.
It's a little narcissistic.
Yes. It's very self-centered and narcissistic. Can be used
in
bad ways. Obviously emasculation. We talked about that last week. It can be, you know, I've seen women that are anti-men because of the way that they carry themselves. Exactly. They're always in a competition with somebody or something all the time. I can't imagine how tiring that has got to be. One of the other traits of the bad side of it is not knowing what your purpose is.
Right.
You know, because you're constantly trying to be the best, you know, just set yourself a goal and achieve that goal. Set yourself a goal, achieve that goal. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know your purpose, figure out what your purpose is. It can be like a bullying situation, you know, making people feel inferior or that emasculation. Mm-hmm. It can be actually dominating to a group or the relationship that you're in. It can make people around you feel inadequate. There is a bad side to pride. So, you know, pride in and of itself isn't a horrible thing unless you allow it to consume yourself. You know, I know, you know, there's something in the Bible about pride, and I know it's one of the deadly sins, but
excuse me.
You can be proud of yourself or an accomplishment, or it's when you treat others differently because of how you feel about yourself.
Like you're better than somebody else.
Yes. So yeah. That's where pride can be bad side of this. Being an independent woman does not give you an excuse to be a bitch.
Exactly.
It does not give you the excuse to be rude. The whole golden rule where you treat others the way you want to be treated. Just think about, do you want to be treated like a bitch? Do you want to be talked down to all the time? No, nobody wants that. So why would a woman do that to anybody and feel confidence and feel better about themselves? And, you know, I think that's where this independent woman has become off the rails. I believe in equality. I believe, there's a balance in a relationship, in life, work-life balance, relationships, obviously there's a balance, taking care of just normal things in a relationship or in a household, there's a balance, because you may want to, you know, because we divvied up the chores. You right. picked vacuuming and dusting.
Yeah, I suck at it.
Well,
I do it.
No, but I take care of the bathrooms and the laundry. You know, it works for us because right. I absolutely despise vacuuming and dusting. So I'm like, yes, I will, you know, take care of the rest of that. So you find what works for you. But, you know, it's not an excuse. You know, don't lose it. Don't use it as an excuse. And the whole I don't need a man attitude, you know, men do pick up on that. And they're kind of like, okay, that's what you want. That's what you'll get.
Yep.
So don't bitch that you're single and alone.
Right.
If you don't need a man, you know.
Because that's your choice.
That is. That's what you're putting out there in the universe. That's what you're going to get. Okay.
Welcome, George.
So now there is good side. Okay. A good side to an independent woman, you know, that woman has confidence in herself, in her abilities, in her worth, in her relationship, in the way she treats people, in the way that she carries herself in her profession, you know, confidence. I find confidence in anybody attractive. I'm not attracted to women, but I seem to be more drawn to confident women, not arrogant women, but confident women
right.
that, you know, those are the people that I draw to. So it helps define your own self-worth. It treats others with respect, equality, being supportive, you know, taking care of other people, allowing others to take care of you. It's the good side is being good to yourself and being forgiving to yourself. I have a hard time with that. I'm not very forgiving to myself. I am probably my own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I've told you, and I've shared with the listeners, my self-talk is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes me days to get out of my own head. As you well know. So I am really mean to myself. But I won't let anybody else be that mean to me.
Right.
So why would I let myself, you know, I need to forgive myself for whatever happened and just move on from it. Use it as a learning experience. Use it as, you know, I could even set a goal that the next time something happens, I'm not going to get in my head. I'm just going to forgive myself and move on. That's a goal I can set for myself. And once I achieve it, you know, I can say, yay me. And it can be rewarding being a good person or being the good side of an independent woman. Doing things for yourself is good, or at least knowing or where or how to get help. That is so important. It doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man. You know, knowing how to take care of yourself, knowing how to sew, just basics, knowing how to change that tire, check your oil. You know, I'll be honest, if it wasn't for the instructions on the jumper cable box or bag, I wouldn't know how to do that. But at least I have a set that has the instructions on it so I can follow them
yep.
instead of just a
red
pair of jumper.
Red, black to black.
Well, but there there's an order.
Yeah.
The good car, bad car. I mean, you know. So I have to make sure that mine stay in that bag. I can't just wad them up and throw them in the back of my truck. So that's what I'm saying. Or I just stand there and somebody will come along and help me, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But yeah, the good side of being an independent woman, it gives you more balance in your life. It can be rewarding doing things for yourself, but don't let it get so out of control that you get to that bad side. Again, this is all my opinion. So just some helpful tips. Stop looking outside yourself for validation. Be kinder to yourself and increase your self-compassion. Stop competing and be more accepting. Mm-hmm. Be aware of social media influencing.
Yes, definitely.
Develop a positive mindset. Seek help if things get too far out of control, because there's so many resources available. So, you know, don't suffer, just get help. And my last closing remark is, remember, sometimes the first impression is the only impression, because exactly. It's the last impression.
That's right.
So be independent. And true. Yes, be independent, but don't be a bitch. You know, right. Nobody wants to be around a bitch. So that's what I had. That was my story, and I did it.
Yay.
Lucky me and you are so much alike, because I beat myself up. I mean, just about everything that you said that you're like, I'm just like that. Yeah. You know,
it's bad. Yeah.
Thank you, Everett.
Just when I think I'm getting out of it, something happens and I do it again, you know? I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Yeah. Well, stalkers make me feel good.
I'm glad you guys joined us tonight. Everybody across the Podbean app and out there on other apps, you can download us. And if not, you can get us at 620patio@gmail.com. Hey.
And that
tonight,
O is O H H.
Yeah, that's right. It's 620HH patio.
Yes.
There you go. Coming up pretty soon here, we got the Pulse with Denali Brett, Tucson Scott. And don't forget our good friend Oz over there with the Strange Day Oz and Outside Oz, plus Outside of Normal. The Old Man's Podcast at 9 a.m. Central Time.
Yes. Tomorrow is his 1,000th
show.
Yeah,
and tomorrow is his 1,000th show.
So
don't
pass
forget
the
that.
Word, pop in.
Throw
give
down
him
with
a,
Russ Brown. Yeah. Come in and welcome him for his 1,000th show. That is a great accomplishment.
Yeah, I've totally banned myself from getting on live shows, but I'm getting on tomorrow to wish him well, because that is such an accomplishment.
And then we have... course on Sundays, we're doing the Illuminate Brilliance of Caps. Don't forget him about Across the Pond over there. Mm-hmm. And don't forget to listen to the Sue UK show every time she throws out a music thing.
Yeah, she has good music.
But yeah, also, I'd like to mention the Wrong Kind of Podcast, WKOP, here in Southeast Kansas. That is the reason I'm on this show.
That's
why we're here. And don't forget to like, follow, join our fan club. It's free. Our fan club is free.
Free beans?
Yeah, free
beans.
Yay.
No, join our fan club.
So if you're on Podbean, come in and join our fan club. If not, you can download us across all apps out there, your favorite app. So don't forget to email our feedback at 620patio@gmail.com.
We know we have a few requests. I think we've had three, and we will kind of work those in.
I think that's probably gonna be one of our next one. Nadia Lemon.
Yes.
I think that's gonna be our next one. And our boundaries of relationships.
Nice.
I think that's where we're going.
I think we'll go with that
so,
next week.
Don't forget.